Arthur, it's time.
Yes.
Did you survive Thanksgiving? This is the food maverick.
Well, I'm here.
Perfect. Good answer.
So, you know, I mean...
considering our topic, good answer.
Right. Our topic is food from dead people because a lot of reasons, got to say.
Yeah.
But I want to start with how I had this even, you know, connection, is that 40-something years ago, there was a cartoon sent to me by Burt Green, who, by the way, is one of the dead people whose food I make. In the cartoon, it was a family sitting around like a Thanksgiving table, you know, a feasting table, let's call it that. And there were, and it was explained that Aunt so-and-so died and left a freezer full of food. And some of the people at the table in their little squibs were thrilled by this. Oh, we're eating Aunt so-and-so's croissants, and she was famous for her croissant. And some of the kids were saying, oh, we're eating the food of dead people.
Really?
I do remember that the main course was cassoulet. And, of course, if your aunt left her famous cassoulet in the freezer, you would never bother making cassoulet. So, which is a project.
Absolutely.
Maybe a couple-day project. So it got me thinking at the time. Actually, so Burt Green is the one who sent me this, and I do remember the whole thing. We probably made a whole radio show out of it, by the way, at the time. And Burt was, I was a food editor of the Daily News, and he was one of my columnists, Burt Green's Kitchen, which became a book later on. Anyway,
he's the 4th of July salad, right?
Pardon me?
He is the 4th of July salad that you quote with George Washington.
Correct. Okay. But I would make it any time of the year. The only thing is it's so fattening.
Okay.
It's such an indulgence that I only make it on the 4th of July, and it's Burt Green's ziti salad.
Okay.
Which is famous enough to be floating around the internet too. It's basically macaroni salad, just that he uses ziti, which at the time was novel. And he has a lot of ingredients in there, like diced tomato and sweet bell pepper, and also a secret ingredient.
The George Washington.
Correct.
Right.
Which I had to buy online. In any case, that's Bert's thing.
Okay.
But before Bert, there was my friend, my dear friend, Marie Coleman. Marie lived down the road from me in West Cornwall.
Right.
Got to say, one of the things that made me super sad and willing to give up West Cornwall was that West Cornwall without Marie
was not the
West
same
Cornwall to me. No. So Marie, who wintered in Florida, not because she was a snowbird, but because her family actually owned a lot of property in Captiva. Her grandmother, now Marie was already, I guess when I met her, she was probably in her 60s. She died, I think, in her early 80s. By the way, not of the coronary disease that the doctor kept telling us she was going to die of. But anyway, she went to Captiva because they had family property there. And then she came to West Cornwall in the spring. So Marie would bring me Blenheim ginger ale from South Carolina. I don't think she had to do a detour to buy this. I think she wanted to do a detour to buy this because she bought some for herself. Now, you can still buy Blenheim ginger ale from, I forget the name of the little town in South Carolina. You can buy it online, and I even this morning was looking around, and I think they might even have it at some Target stores. In any case, it is an extremely strong ginger ale, so strong I could not drink it straight. I had to water it down with seltzer in order to get... And it's delicious. It's real strong, fresh ginger taste. But anyway, so that was on the door of my refrigerator for a good 20 years so that every time I opened up the refrigerator door, I could think of Marie through that ginger ale. But on top of that, Marie left me... Well, she didn't leave me, but she had given me, and every time she went to Florida, she would bring back for me what I called the key lime pie kit.
Mm.
which consisted of key lime juice, which I was instructed to put in the in cubes in the freezer for future use, and little packets she would make with plastic wrap of just enough key lime zest for a pie, and you buy your own evaporated milk, condensed milk, whatever it was. I actually have her recipe in my files.
Ooh.
And I don't often make it because I have no access, really, to... I guess they do sell key lime juice in the soup, in bottles, don't they?
Yeah,
I should try that.
It'd be interesting because I was always, you know, I this is another age giver awayer. But do you remember that so-called lemon juice that you could buy?
It was a green. The one that came in the plastic
green.
Lemon?
Well, or in
a bottle.
I'm thinking of the green bottle.
I think it was called Real Lemon was the name of the brand.
Whatever it was, you know, I was like, oh, yeah, because I always, from the time that I was really young, because I had a French next-door neighbor who taught me how to cook, and I knew how to make salad dressing, and that was like the first thing I learned how to make. But the reason
not
I mentioned...
Not a bad thing to learn how to make.
No, no, really, but what was totally cool, and the second was meringue, but the... What was so cool about it was, obviously, she taught me to taste as I go with my finger to just, you know, keep clean, obviously. But, and so I knew what lemon tasted like. And the reason that I'm boring on with this is because I was like, oh, how easy. It was reconstituted lemon juice. That's what it was. And I made my mom buy some. And I thinking, this is going to be, my life is going. Oh, my God, I don't know what it was in it. It's like fat-free sour cream. What is in it? So I just don't know whether the lime, the key lime, it must be different now.
Key lime doesn't taste like regular limes.
I understand.
And
I am a key lime aficionado.
And the true key lime pie is made with only... I think it's evaporated milk, maybe condensed milk. I'm not remembering.
What's
because
the
they don't make it that way.
Because I don't know the difference.
But I'm going to look it up while we're here.
All right. I don't know the difference.
Pardon me?
What's the difference between condensed and evaporated milk?
Well, condensed milk is sweet,
okay.
And the other one is not.
Okay.
I mean, it's sweeter than whole milk, but
okay.
It's not. Yeah, it's not sweetened. In fact, it's called... sweetened condensed milk. So, I have this somewhere. But in any case, the action of the acidic citrus fruit, be it limes, key limes, or lemons, maybe grapefruit is acidic enough to do this too. You add that to either cooked cream or evaporated milk or condensed milk, and it solidifies without any other additions, just sugar, the juice, and a milk product. And I make something that goes by that same theory, which is posset. I've talked about this on the air before. I'll quickly, if you have a cup of cream, bring it to a simmer, let it simmer for 3 minutes, and as soon as it's 3 minutes, take it off the heat, stir in 3 tablespoons of lemon juice. Oh, but I'm sorry, the sugar, you have to add 1/4 cup of sugar to the cream and boil it. And then you add the 3 tablespoons of lemon juice, and that's it. Pour it into little custard cups. It will solidify on its own in the refrigerator. I like it when it's freshly made, like, you know, just a few hours in the refrigerator. But actually, if you leave it, as I've done accidentally, uncovered in the refrigerator, it forms a little stiffer mixture on the very top. And so some people like it that way. But key lime is exactly the same thing. I got to say, the other Marie Kalman thing that I cannot part with, I don't know, Marie must be gone 20 years? 25 years. Maybe 26 years. Anyway, she had bushes of these on Captiva, those little red berries. I'm trying to think what they're called, but they were always sold as red peppercorns.
Not okay, so they weren't the poison red berries.
And no, they're red, they call them red. You can buy them in a store, red peppercorns. But Marie had, it was like a weed, she said, on her property. So she literally would bring me big boxes full, meaning like cardboard boxes full. And she liked the idea, and I did it, of me putting all these in a huge jar in the hallway. So I do still have a bottle of the red peppercorns from Marie's garden. I bet you they don't taste like anything anymore, but they're pretty to look at, and they remind me of Marie.
Did you grind them ever, or was it all?
Yes, you know, that's what you do. Sometimes you buy these fancy pepper mixes, which come green peppercorn and brown peppercorn and red peppercorn. These are the red peppercorn, and it's a weed in Florida. I don't know what, I have to look up and see what you call it. Okay. But I know that it was an unwanted growth. Isn't that what we call a weed?
I don't know, because I
are you an anti-gardener or a gardener?
Both. Weeds are, you know, another kid thing was a book called Mud Pies and Other Recipes. And it was hilarious. And you give it to your three-year-old and put them outside and let them play. So there are certain weeds that I've always been fond of certain weeds. So I'm not the anti-weed. I think I've got to say that. And again,
I learned in my early days of gardening that weeds are just plants that are growing where you don't want them to grow.
Yeah, except that. I think that's good.
The fact is, you might like them if they were growing in some other place.
And they might be useful if they're growing in some other place.
They could be very useful.
And I just am always interested that poison ivy and jewelweed grow together, because jewelweed is the antidote to poison ivy. So there's a certain synergy. I hate that word. There's a certain resonance to the different weeds, I guess. And
I don't know.
I do. Meaning that I do know
anyway,
that poison ivy and jewelweed.
Back to food of dead people.
Oh, yes.
If I may.
You may.
My dear friend and newspaper colleague from Daily News, Suzanne Hamlin, passed away a year ago May. And a day doesn't go by that I don't think of her. We were very close. And also, we talked. Many mornings, like, you know, at least three or four mornings a week. She was the only other person I knew who was up as early as I am. So anyway, she was a wonderful baker. In fact, Suzanne went through a period, a sort of eating disorder period, where she would come into the office, this at the Daily News, with baked goods that she had made overnight and didn't eat. So I learned, by the way, that is a sign of an eating disorder, somebody who cooks a lot but doesn't eat the food. But Suzanne would bring in these wonderful baked goods, including what became her famous Louisville lemon bars. Now, I don't know what's Louisville about them, except it's a nice alliteration, and Suzanne was a wonderful writer, and she might have been tickled by Louisville lemon bars. And this, I'm very fortunately, this recipe she contributed to a little book called Gifts from the Christmas Kitchen. Now, Suzanne did many things well, but always needed some editing, and I was her editor. And I have to say, the recipe, although, okay, so an okay written recipe, I think, has an error or two in it, and I might have caught that if I was editing it. But this book was edited by published by Irena Chalmers, who she herself just died a couple of years ago. And this booklet is from 1983. Wow, is that 40 years ago? So the lemon bar, I made them this morning, because they've been on my mind. I tell you, another reason they've been on my mind is another friend who passed away, Carol Walter, has a lemon bar recipe. I have to find it. I'm sure I have it because I have all her books. Carol Walter was my baking guru, and she was a great baking teacher. She died in her 90s, just within the last year. And when her daughter called me to give me the sad news, well, Carol had not been well for many years, but she was all there. I spoke to her on the phone. And by the way, she even gave baking lessons at the nursing home. In her wheelchair, she would just tell somebody, I don't know who, there, what to do, and they did it, and she talked. She could always talk. Anyway, when her daughter called, she said, told me about when the shiva was, but it was in far New Jersey. And she said, you know, it's probably too far for you to come to the shiva, but just to say, I'm making my mother's lemon bars. So I have to make Carol Walters' lemon bars, too. But Suzanne's came out very good. Just before we went on the air, I tasted a corner of this, and I was concerned that it wasn't going to come out of the pan, but it does with careful removal technique, meaning take a pointy knife and go all around the edge. However, if I make these again, which I probably will because they really are good, I will probably butter and flour the pan a little more heavily. Anyway, Suzanne's Louisville lemon bars are in this little 1983 booklet, and they're super easy. The bottom part, the cookie part, is a shortbread. It's actually made with confectioner's sugar, which reminds me of the Italian dough that I use. I have to look up the exact proportions, but I think they're exactly the same, that I use to make a few different Italian cookies. But it's a cup of flour and 8 tablespoons. That's one stick, by the way. So this is unedited recipe. If I was editing Suzanne, which I did practically every day, I would have said 1 stick of unsalted butter. If it's salted, it's okay. I let it soften to room temperature, and 1/4 cup of confectioner's sugar. That's what makes it different than a lot of shortbread recipes. And, by the way, makes it a little easier to manage. But this one you don't have to worry about. So you mix all, you let the butter come to room temperature, and then you mix it all together. I did it with a fork. It was very easy to mix that together, a cup of flour, a stick of butter softened, and 1/4 cup of confectioner's sugar, and you'll get a dough. And you press that dough into your prepared pan. Now, here's another where Suzanne needed an editor. There is no such thing that I can find, a 9-inch square metal pan. I have several sizes of baking pans.
I always thought it was 8 and a something, and I wondered
it is. You're right. It's 8 and something.
And I just always wondered why.
It's not 9-inch.
And
then the recipe says butter and lightly flour a 9 by 2-inch square metal baking pan. First of all, it lies so low in the pan, it doesn't matter if it's 2 inches deep. But it does matter about what the square is. And she said 9-inch square. It's the 8-and-whatever-inch square pan.
Okay.
Yeah. Butter and flour. And as I said, next time I'm going to do it a little more heavily. And then you just press this dough into the bottom of the pan until you can get a nice even layer, and put it in a 350-degree oven for 20 minutes. It's a bit of time. And meantime, we make the lemon topping, which is a cup of sugar and 2 eggs beaten together. I use a whisk in a bowl. You don't have to take out a machine to do this. 2 eggs and a cup of sugar. And when they're very well mixed and getting and nice and thick, you can add the rind of 1 lemon. And I use the max amount of lemon juice, 4 tablespoons. It might even have been a drop or 2 over 4 tablespoons. Suzanne says 3 to 4 tablespoons. 3 didn't make it with me. So you mix that all together, and when you take the shortbread bottom out of the oven after 20 minutes, mix in 1/2 teaspoon of baking powder into your lemony mixture, and pop it back in the oven for another 25 minutes. And that is it. Pull it out, let it cool in the pan. It's at least 15 minutes. And then you can put confectioner's sugar on the top. I don't think it's necessary. And it, Suzanne did follow directions here. I'm in this book too. This was supposed to be a gift item, you know. So she says pack it into a tightly closed tin, and it does make a nice gift, especially, you know, a hostess gift if you're going to somebody over the holidays. Now, I also, a lot of the recipes in here, by the way, by very famous food writers, at this point, a lot of them aren't remembered anymore, but in their day, they were important, and I would trust the recipes. I see Alice Waters is in here. Sheila Lukens and Julie Russo are in here.
Are they alive or dead?
Palace. Pardon me?
Are they both dead?
I don't know about Julie. I do know that Sheila is.
I remember Sheila because I
don't make, you know what? I know the most famous recipe, they did create this, is that chicken dish. What is it called? Marbella, chicken marbella. My sister used to make this recipe. Years later, I'm quoted somewhere in the 25th anniversary book, which must be by the 45th anniversary book by now, or 50th anniversary book. But in any case, I went to make that recipe, and it had way more sugar than I would ever put in anything except dessert. And I just saw on TikTok somebody making that dish, and they had updated it, but I don't know how they updated it. It still had some crazy amount of brown sugar in it, as well as some other sweet
stuff.
That
is very funny. I just for the record, I know the recipe, and I was reading it because one of the things that I like to do is read recipes and decide whether I – and I got to the brown sugar years ago. I was like,
All right. So my dear friend Suzanne Hamlin, in reviewing the Silver Palette Cookbook, which I say must – at least 40 years ago, said of the recipes, they're wonderful recipes if you leave off the last seven ingredients.
Exactly. Okay. I was thinking about and when you do
it was
food,
way overdone.
When you do food shows, I just have to, in honor of Suzanne, I'm going to say this. I sometimes, you know, we'll be turning to something else, and we'll see one of these murderous food shows that just, you know, beat the clock by making something. And that you can leave off the last 17 ingredients because I've never seen anything quite so complicated in my life. It's like, stop. You had a beautiful piece of meat there. Stop.
In this little book of supposedly gifts from the Christmas kitchen, I see who followed directions and who didn't care. But I am definitely going to make Burt Green's sour cream coffee cake. It is very easy, and I'm sure it's going to be very delicious. There was nothing that Burt did that wasn't delicious. And then, and this way, I can have a full Burt Green meal with ziti salad and sour cream coffee cake. Now, I followed directions, too, and I gave a recipe for something that you would really want to give as a gift, I think. My grandfather's rock and rye. Now, let me explain that my grandfather, Barney Schwartz, did not drink, at least in not my lifetime. I mean, there was always this bottle of rock and rye, which we only were supposed to have if we had a cold or if we were sick. But he might have taken a nip of that, too. I don't know. Now they sell rock and rye in bottles in the liquor store. But all it is, I shouldn't say all it is, but it's rock sugar and rye whiskey, and you let, of course, the rock sugar dissolve in the rye whiskey. My grandfather always added orange and lemon. So I thought that was part of the cold remedy, too, and probably is. If you're making this for your cold, not a bad thing to add lemon, you know, a little vitamin C here. So this makes one quart, a large, thin-skinned orange, which means a big juice orange. Cut it into eighths. If it has seeds, poke out the seeds. You put this in a quart jar. A half of a nice lemon, also cut into eighths. And then, depending on how you like it, 5 to as much as 8 ounces of rock candy. You know, that's the candy on a string.
Yeah.
Remember that?
I sure do.
All right, you put that in the jar, and then you top it off with 24 ounces of rye. You let this sit for, I don't know, at least 3 or 4 days before you start drinking it. My grandfather sat there, I'm sure, for a year because it didn't get used very often. He really was very parsimonious with this. I said, I don't, you know, I just the other day was thinking about all the things I did not ask my grandfathers. So if you still have grandfathers, sit down and have a talk with them about their history, about the family history. It seemed appropriate for Thanksgiving, and I asked my 7-year-old great-niece what she wanted to know about me, and she said, "What's your favorite color?" But, of course, that's what a 7-year-old would think of.
But, you know, that's pretty cool because she will be able to tell her grandchildren that she... I'm serious.
Uncle Arthur's favorite color was whatever.
That was Uncle Arthur's favorite color that you're wearing. And that...
I have to say, here's one that she did say. I wasn't present at the time, but her mother reported this. They were cooking something together. I don't remember what. Her mother and she... And she showed her mother how to stir in the figure eight, which she told her mother is something she learned from Uncle Arthur.
Well, there you go.
So every time she stirs in the figure eight for the rest of her life, I hope she thinks of me. I think of people, I must say, in connection with a lot of things in the kitchen. For instance, when I'm chopping or slicing, I hear my friend Norman Weinstein, who used to be a knife instructor, whispering in my ear.
Knife skills.
If I make a salad with whole herbs, which I do from time to time in the summer, especially with basil.
We're out of time, right? We just had to throw
No,
that
I don't.
In. Okay.
I'm going on and on because I like this.
I know, me too. So I just thought
well,
I'd throw that in before.
Barbara Kafka. Anyway, Barbara Kafka is a whole program unto herself, but she taught me about putting whole herbs in salads.
Is she alive?
No.
Then we can do part two.
We could. She was the queen of the microwave in its day.
Oh.
As I said, we could go on. But Barbara Kafka was a woman before her time. She failed at a number of things which became successful after she failed on them, meaning nobody got it. When Barbara did it, and it took some time for people to get, like...
So she was before her time.
Like a store. She had a store that just sold American ingredients and products.
She was before her time, let's say.
Yeah, what did I say?
Oh, I don't know. I thought you said after, but I could have misheard.
No, I hope I said before her time.
Well, we will say
anyway,
before. Anyway.
Part two, one of these days.
Sounds good. In meantime,
and,
lemon bars. Yum.
I'm going to make some rock and rye today. I have to...
You gotta find rock candy,
rock sugar, yeah.
And then I have to also ask that you find put me on Burt Green's sour cream coffee cake list, please.
Oh yeah, it's an easy recipe. I will.
Okay.
All right.
Take care. To be continued.
Everybody have a great post Thanksgiving week.